Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show.
We have Blackhawks hockey tonight on NBC Sports Chicago. The last time Alex DeBrincat took the ice, the rookie scored his third hat trick of the season. What will his encore be with the Avs in town tonight? Blackhawks pregame live drops the puck on our coverage at 7, and Pat Foley and Steve Conrad have the call from UC at 7:30. Loyola's in the Sweet 16, and the school might sweeten its head coach's paycheck. Porter Moser reportedly discussing an extension with a boost in salary. But is it only delaying the inevitable? And the Bulls' battle toward the bottom continues with a loss in New York. Meanwhile, one of college basketball's biggest names is officially going pro. Should the Bulls be interested in Trae Young? Sports Talk Live next. Welcome into Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Guest host David Kaplan is on vacation again. Let's meet the panel for today's show. A man getting a much-deserved day off after a long hoop season, Jordan Bernfield, Fox 32 Shea Pepler, and from the Tribune, our friend Teddy Greenstein. So we start with what else? Loyola basketball. Sun-Times report says Porter Moser is discussing a new contract with Loyola. Will it be enough to keep him in Chicago?
Sorry, you don't need the Sun-Times to report that. We've been saying for like a month that obviously they're going to be discussing new parameters. I mean, Porter makes $420,000.
Right.
Found that out about a month ago. And that is probably mid-level for the Valley. The highest level of the Valley is Northern Illinois and Ben Jacobson. He's at $900,000. That's considered an outlier in the league. So it's just a question of how high Loyola can go. And it's probably, I mean, if they go higher than 7 or 750, I think that's going to be a really bold move. The thing is, it is kind of delaying the inevitable because middle class in the Big Ten is like $2 million a year. Now, the good news for Loyola is I don't think there are going to be any Big Ten jobs open. So then it's a question of Big 12, SEC. Porter's such a Midwest guy. Do any of those conferences say, I don't care where he's from, I want to have this guy coach our program?
Sooner or later, a coach leaves. I never thought Bryce Drew would leave my dear Valpo, but you know what? Vandy opened up, and sooner or later, he went. So, but it took a long time. But that doesn't always happen. His dad, Homer Drew, stayed at Valpo for a long time, and he went up to the Sweet 16. So has
different
it changed that much?
I mean, you're not serious. I mean, I like your dry wit and sarcasm. You didn't seriously think Bryce Drew was going to stay there.
Well, at some point I did because he'd been there a long time. I didn't think he was going to leave. I'm totally okay with him going. Don't get me wrong.
I mean, when Homer had his success, he was already in his 60s, I believe, and Bryce is an up-and-comer, and he's, you know, and also the money is such now, as you all know,
that
you can't. You can't leave certain jobs you can't say no to. That said, Porter loves it here. And he's not just going to go to any job because he's got this program in such a strong state right now that he could stay for another year, make a good tourney run, and then have his choice of jobs next year.
I don't think there's any amount of money that Loyola could throw at him to keep him there. I think there's just too many bigger jobs that could offer him more money. I think we're just delaying the inevitable, like we said. I threw this out to Jordan earlier in the green room. DePaul? I know that's not a vacant job.
Yeah.
But he's shown he can recruit. He's shown he can coach. He can develop guys that maybe are underperforming there at DePaul right now.
If I'm DePaul, I'd throw the money at him.
Yeah.
Why not?
Why not?
I think it's a great idea. He would absolutely have to listen. Look, I spent a couple days with Porter and that team, and he mentioned a couple times, I got four kids in Catholic school. He also has a house in Wilmette, $420,000 after taxes, and your kid's school really doesn't go very far.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that the Midwest connections that he has here, the fact that he's been sort of a Valley lifer, if you will. I mean, he was at Illinois State for a long time. He's been in a couple other Valley stops. He's done a great job at Loyola. And what some people may not realize, because this is kind of the first time they've been at this level of attention, he's been at Loyola for 7 years now. And so you wonder if it will eventually be the time where he says, listen, I came here when we were a lower part of the Horizon League. We changed to the Valley. We went to the top of the Valley. They have a 30-win season, a Sweet 16. Though the one thing that a lot of times with a mid-major coach, it's the money, and I agree with you, Teddy. If they offer him $2 million to coach somewhere, it's one thing. The other thing is, think about how hard it is to get to where they are right now.
Yes.
They went they went 28-5 in the regular season. They had to win the conference just to make the tournament. And now, after two wins, which required basically buzzer-beating shots, they're in the Sweet 16. They've had an incredible year. They deserve all the accolades they're getting. But if I'm a coach, you know, one of the attractive parts of it, too, is that, hey, if I'm coaching at a – even at the A-10 level, you might get five teams into the tournament. I just have to be one of the top four to get in, as opposed to in this league, which – while I do think the Valley's a really good league, you got to win it to get to the tournament every year.
In addition, though, to winning games and putting this program on the map, there's also butts in the seats in that arena. There was a time when there was about 40 students in that arena back in the day. Now they weren't winning games, but something Porter talked about the other day on campus was the fact that he was a really grassroots kind of coach. He was going over to dorms. He was selling hot dogs. He's interested in developing programs. He can do that, and he's shown that he can do that, and I think that would be great for a program that maybe needs a little bit more of that on a bigger stage.
I can tell you, he gets along great with the AD, Steve Watson. There's a new president, and he's a big fan of hers, and what Porter told me about her is she's one of us because she was a college athlete. Yeah. So everything is set up for him to stay, and you look at it, and it's exactly like Chris Collins last year at Northwestern, with one key difference. Northwestern's in the Big Ten, and Northwestern ended up giving Chris Collins $3 million a year, which Loyola cannot do.
Can't.
So
doesn't
he's
matter.
Not just going to leave for any job, but if somebody's offering him $2 million a year, it's going to be tough to keep him.
Why doesn't one of these rich alums from Loyola pony up and say,
oh,
you know what,
on.
This is the most attention my school's ever had. I have nowhere else to give my money. Give it to the basketball coach because this is the most attention our university has had since the 60s.
Well, there is something to be said for that because if you think about the Valley's recent history, Greg Marshall of Wichita State, prior to their move to the American Conference, he was making Big Ten money. He's making $3 million a year, right? So you're talking about a guy who's coaching in the Valley. Now, big difference there. Wichita State went to a Final Four, which maybe that will happen for Loyola. We'll see. But they were consistently going deep in the tournament for a number of years.
Well, also, they sell 15,000 seats.
Yes.
I mean, they are a financial powerhouse. No, there is an alum like that. His name is Al Norville, and he already gives generously. They're going to be opening up a practice facility in about a year and a half.
What's his name? Al?
Yeah, I know.
Come on, man.
Norville. So either they have to really sweet talk him again or find somebody else who might be willing to, you know, exceed what Northern Iowa gives Ben Jacobson.
Going back to Greg Marshall, though, he was still considering other jobs, just the fit wasn't right and the money wasn't right. I know that he was in talks with UCLA for a while. His family even flew out there to look at home. So it's not like Greg Marshall wasn't looking at other jobs. It just wasn't the right fit for his family.
The other thing that you said earlier, Teddy, which I think you're right about, is that next year, while it's going to be extremely hard for Loyola to get back to this point, they are going to be really good, I would think, again next year. Because even though you're losing Ben Richardson, you're losing Dante Ingram, you've got Krutwig, a freshman, coming back as a sophomore. Clayton Custer is going to be back next year as a senior. I mean, there's going to be pieces there next year where they could be at the top of the Valley again and win again. And if you're Porter Moser, you might say to yourself, if we have more success next season, then I could be in a position a year from now to make even more money at even a bigger program.
You know what I'm giggling about?
Yes, I do. so we're 8.5 minutes into the show, and we're still talking Loyola basketball. Now, that's something out of the gate. Let's talk about the game.
Yeah.
Nevada's coming up. I don't know why they can't beat Nevada. They're a two-point underdog, and things have lined up in their region where it's not unthinkable that he takes them to the Final Four.
No,
maybe not likely, but it's not unthinkable.
Well, listen, the way the bracket's gone, right? I mean, I've got this here. No one had this, right?
No.
Okay? No one had this bracket.
In the whole world, nobody had it.
So why not Loyola? Really, I mean, the key to this game, I think, for the Ramblers is to keep the pace where they want it to be. Nevada's a team that's going to try to run up and down the floor. They're an explosive offensive team. Some people have been saying that Loyola is kind of a slow-it-down team, which I don't really think is true. I think that's been true in these two games. What I think is true about Loyola is they're a very efficient offensive team. In the two games that they've won, they've moved the ball around a ton, which is sort of a staple of Porter's offense. But because they've been playing athletes that are a little bit superior, they're not going to shoot until they get the best shot they can. Mm-hmm. So I think they can play at a faster pace, but the key is going to be, can they defend Nevada and keep them from running up and down the floor? I believe that if they can keep this game in the 60s, they probably can win it.
Yeah, Jordan, I mean, you nailed it. They're a quote-unquote slow team because they actually pass the ball. I mean, they turn down more good shots than some teams take in a game. I mean, it is amazing. They'll turn down open 18-footers to try to find a better shot with 9 on the clock. They are incredibly patient. And I think, I mean, that's their trademark. But they play good defensively. And Nevada is a high-scoring team, a high-scoring team with a bunch of 6'7 guys who, even if they fall behind 20 points in the second half, Nevada's going to think, the Wolfpack's going to think they can still win.
Nevada has only led in about 80 minutes of basketball in this tournament for about 4 minutes. So they're used to playing from behind, whereas on the other side, Loyola has really not played from behind very much at all. Now, we talk about them sharing the basketball. I made the joke the other day. We talk about ball don't lie. This team, ball doesn't stick. I mean, that's really their bread and butter is sharing the basketball, and they've just been able to make adjustments in every single game, no matter how big the athletes are or how much of a mismatch there is on the floor. So I think this is a very winnable game for them, especially if they don't get behind early. I think that'll be the key.
Mr. Northwestern, is this run more impressive than what the Cats did last year?
I mean, I think it is. And listen, you have to give Loyola credit for this. First of all, they've won 2 games and they got to the Sweet 16, and they won their conference. I mean, listen, what Northwestern did last year, and this is the Northwestern alum here.
Sure. I love that, I'm not Mr. Northwestern
in
this group.
Well, I mean, the years
that... back up, Mr. Northwestern.
Right.
I dumped Northwestern for Loyola. I told Chris Collins, I'm done with you guys. Yeah. Absolutely.
Right, but what I would say is what Northwestern did last year was great because obviously, you've been trying to get to the NCAA tournament forever, and it was a wonderful run, and it was captivating and all those things. What Loyola has done was they dominated their league, they won their conference, and they're in the Sweet 16. And those are not things that Northwestern did last year. Northwestern was very good in the Big Ten. They had a really good year.
You can't compare the Valley versus the Big Ten last year.
Hold on. I'm not saying it's the same thing, but I'm saying when you're talking about strictly accomplishments, they have accomplished more.
Sure. I mean, I think you have to compare round of 32 games. I mean, Northwestern fell 20-something points behind Gonzaga, got to a point where it was going to be 3, and then, we got a hand through the cylinder there, and that completely, basically ended the game.
Against a team that went to the national championship.
Right, exactly. Yes. Tennessee, very good.
I'm not
trying
to take anything away from
last
their
year.
Run.
So it's close, but, I mean, a lot of these things are little breaks here and there. But, I mean, similar patterns. I mean, last year, Northwestern was an 8 seed in the NCAA tournament, and I think Loyola should have been an 8 seed in this team's tournament. If you played Northwestern last year versus Loyola this year, it's a coin flip.
I don't know if Loyola would be able to, if they win this game, get past Kentucky. I'd say that's the only... obviously the only team on
decent
their side
athletes.
Of the bracket that has decent athletes, but they start 5 freshmen. So the only people that can really beat Kentucky, I think, would be Kentucky. If you've got 5 freshmen saying, oh, piece of cake, no big deal, Loyola,
right.
Chicago,
yep.
Kansas State, we'll get past them in a minute. That's when teams have a tendency to cruise right past you.
Here is our Ankin Law Sports Talk Live poll question. Make sure you go to NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. Which team will make the playoffs next season? Is it going to be the Bulls, the Blackhawks, both, or neither? It's an interesting topic. We've got the Blackhawks and Bulls basically both being eliminated from the postseason in 1 week.
Yeah.
Which of those teams
really
slides on in there?
All season.
Smooth segue, by the way, to our Bulls-Blackhawks discussion.
Yeah. I
would say the Bulls have like 15% chance to make the playoffs next year, don't you think? I mean, they're only going to get the 8th pick in the draft. It's going to be a guy who's probably played 1 year in college. I don't think they're planning on going big in free agency. So Bulls-wise, I'm saying 15%. These guys would be better on the Blackhawks than I would.
Well, hold on a second. The NBA allows more teams into the playoffs than any other league.
So what
league?
Percentage did you say Bulls making next year?
I would say of the
at
teams that you
50.
Threw. Yeah,
come on!
At least 50.
If Tankathon wasn't going on, I'm not sure they weren't going to make it this year.
Exactly. The NBA lets anybody in the playoffs.
How much are we going to bet on this?
The Bulls make
the playoffs next year.
We'll come up with something.
Exactly.
I mean, are the Bulls even going to be trying to make the playoffs next
season? It doesn't matter. The NBA welcomes everybody.
No, but it does.
But if you look at who the Bulls play and who they rest now, it does matter. I mean, they literally had zero desire to beat the Knicks.
Right. They might be tanking again next year. I mean, if Noah Vonleh is starting in February, I doubt they're going to make the playoffs
next
year.
They also might end up with a really high pick in the draft, 2 first-round picks. Maybe one of them is Trae Young, who just said he's coming out for the NBA.
He ain't getting them the playoffs.
Mo Bamba. What if you end up sliding in the lottery and somehow the ping pong balls fall your way?
I mean, if
you put
get,
Bagley on the Bulls next year, you're telling me they don't make
the Bulls,
you tell me they don't make the playoffs?
If you can get DeAndre Ayton, then they got a chance. But what's that, like a 5% chance? Or, you know, well, your 50 still, is relying right. on a 5, Luke. I don't think that's a good chance.
Yeah, there. I mean, I think it's still, even if you added DeAndre Ayton to this team, I still don't think they're a playoff team next year. I mean, I know that the Blackhawks have had a rough year, but one could argue that Corey Crawford's been out. If he was healthy, they probably wouldn't be this bad, that they still have problems and there's still issues, but maybe with a better goaltender, they would be competing for the 8th spot in the playoffs. The Bulls, if they were fully healthy and trying to win every game, still are probably not a playoff team, right? I know that they had a good run.
Definitely not a playoff team next year.
No one's saying that they're going to win the championship next year. That's not.
But
no,
you're saying they're going to win 42 games
next
year.
I'm saying I think that the NBA allows a lot of teams that are not worthy of being in the playoffs into the playoffs, and with the right piece of the puzzle on the Bulls, it could be possible. You could have a difference maker in a franchise. You don't know. These guys played one year in college.
Even last year we were talking about, are the Bulls going to get into the playoffs with the nonsense of Wade and Rondo and
all
those guys?
They had incredible players on the team.
You had Jimmy Butler and nobody.
Rondo, late in the season, was the man. I mean, they might have won that first round.
We're going to make this wager, Ted.
Let's
do it. Both those teams make the playoffs next year, Bulls and Blackhawks. I'll double down on it.
Name your amount, brother.
Oh, we'll find something.
Yeah. This is like Caps Bears are going to win 9 games. Aren't
a lot of wagers going on.
Yeah, if you want to triple it by saying the Bears are going to make the playoffs.
No, I'm not going that far.
Let's go big.
So where would you like to see the Bulls go after? I mean, Trae Young said today, Bamba said today he was going to go. I mean, there's a lot of good guys, although I will say you watched a lot of those players in the NCAA tournament, and a lot of the names you heard, not so great in the first couple games.
I hear you.
Porter was walking around like he could barely move his back.
He
feel terrible
excuse.
For that kid.
You know, the one I love is Jaren Jackson from Michigan State, and he had zero impact on that second game, and I don't know about the first one. I mean, they didn't play him that much, but so his stock might have fallen a little bit. I would like to see them get a big guy who's defensive-minded, so Bamba or Jackson would be my first two thoughts if they can get him.
I think the Bulls will go for a wing type of player, considering you've got Dunn and Markkanen and Levine. I think they'll go for a wing. And I think Mikal Bridges, who is still playing in the tournament out of Villanova, would probably be the best option for that piece of the puzzle. I like Trae Young. I think he's comparable to Steph Curry, the way he spreads out the floor and makes shots. But I don't know that, and I think he'd be a great asset on any team. I'm not saying you'd deny him if he was coming to the Bulls. I just think they would rather have a wing type of a player.
I think Shea's onto something here, because especially in Fred Hoiberg's system, if he's going to be the coach moving forward, I mean, in a pace and space kind of game, you want somebody that can run the floor, and not that Ayton can't, but I mean, that doesn't scream like pace and space kind of player, right? I mean, if you get a player like that, obviously the talent level's there that you'd want him. I'm just saying that if you got a dynamic wing to add to this team who can score, who can run the floor, who can be part of an up-tempo system, that might – everyone's trying to be the Warriors right now, right? So
the thing is,
why not add the next Steph Curry?
But the thing is,
I'm just not sold on him.
Yeah,
totally is an NBA player. I think he'll be good, but I don't
know.
Where
Zach LaVine has a reputation for being below average defensively. Markkanen, I don't think, is viewed as particularly strong defensively. Do you want a third guy who is viewed as weak defensively, or do you want to try to balance it out with somebody who can actually, you know, protect the rim and not demand 20 shots a game?
And Bridges can do both. My pick. He can do both. He's a good player on both sides of the ball. He really is. But I also don't know if this Bulls team has really pushed defense this year. I think they're trying to speed up tempo.
Sure.
They're trying to work on more offensive drills and being better offensively. So I think if you implement more defense, maybe it would get a little bit better.
Why haven't the Bulls had any billboards that say LeBron on them? Everyone else is doing it. I'm just saying.
Or Kawhi Leonard.
Right. Yeah. I mean, everyone else.
Then you'd have your playoff team, Luke.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe you know something.
I better make
the world
that trade
doesn't.
Right now, Teddy, 16% agree with me.
Yeah.
Both teams. Look at that.
That's
convincing
perfect.
People.
That's like 6-1.
Oof, 20.
9-1 odds.
20%.
I give you 9-1, even money. That's perfect.
Are the people that are saying both are going to make the playoffs next year, are they wearing grass skirts and holding maracas right now?
Well, if it's Cap, Cap's voting on this somewhere in Aruba right now, just typing away. You can keep voting on that poll question throughout the show, NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. To the surprise of absolutely nobody, the White Sox sent Michael Kopech to the minors. Will we see him in the majors this season? Sox fans have a whole new reason also to feel disrespected, thanks to a critique that hit a little too close to home. Sports Talk Live, back right after this. Come on, Bulls Blackhawks playoffs, I'm telling you.
I'm on your team.
Next year.
Can't get enough of your Blackhawks? Tune in every single game day to Blackhawks pregame and flip back after the action for postgame live. All season long, all 82 games, only on NBC Sports Chicago.
Welcome back to Sports Talk Live. Beautiful guaranteed rate field. Getting ready for opening day, but Forbes says it's the 28th best ballpark in baseball. Wrigley is only 10th. Now, if Sox fans were angry before, both sides of town are teed about this. Sox fans real angry. I will say this, the food is spectacular on the south side.
Agreed.
And so I don't know how you put a 20. And then I looked at some of the teams that had ballparks that were in the top 10, even ahead of the Cubs. And
St. Louis.
Petco Park.
What was number
one? Who goes to San Diego to see a baseball game? Nobody. Let's plan a trip to go see Petco. Nobody ever said that in the history of the world.
I haven't been to the new Busch in St. Louis.
It's
that also made
special.
I know, I've never heard anything great about it.
And underneath, it's like this crazy maze of trying to get to the, not that anybody out there cares, but trying to get to the ballpark, you have to pass through like two restaurants underneath the stadium. It's a disaster.
Well, what was the number one stadium?
I don't know what was number one.
I don't know.
I know.
There were some
Dodgers was there. Kaufman was there.
AT&T Park.
Oh, the Giants. That place
see, that
is
I okay. That I can see
I'm okay
one.
With that being number one. I'm okay with Fenway being on the list.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
there's some strange ones on there.
The kick in the groin of this list is that 29
Oakland.
And 30 are so bad to be associated with them. It's just like, here's all I'll say in defense of this list, which I still don't like, and I think they call the guaranteed rates field. Anyway, we're living in an era of great ballparks, right? Like in the 80s, most of them sucked. Now, the vast majority of them are really good. So even if you have like the 22nd ballpark, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
But 28 is too low.
I like Kauffman too, but it like again, nobody plans a whole vacation around going to Kauffman. And
it is really
nice. It's a beautiful scene.
It's really nice.
But it's just.
That's what the whole thing's about. But can I just make a suggestion as to how we can make this ballpark better? Can we flip the arrow? Like, does it have to be down?
They tried.
Really?
Yeah. G-rate would not agree to it.
Because I just, it's like negativity.
Yep.
The downward arrow. I feel like an upward arrow would make everything better.
Maybe that's why it was 28th.
Maybe.
The arrow was already pointing down.
Yeah, but what happens in 2 years? Arrow going up.
That's true. Maybe they change it then.
That's what they're waiting for.
You're going to be there with the spray paint.
That's what they're waiting for.
And you're going to be Bart Simpson on that.
Somebody's going to do it. I'm telling you. It's the way to turn things around. But the food, I will say, great at the rate.
It's a perfectly enjoyable
They've craft beers now, too.
Absolutely.
They've switched to Coke products. Mullen.
Good tailgating. They probably didn't account for the tailgating.
I wonder if in 2 years after all the stuff is done at Wrigley Field, if a new Forbes list would have it higher up. Because it probably now, they might have.
It's already
I don't know.
Awesome.
Did they? Yeah. Well, did they factor in like construction? Is that what brought them down to 10th? I'm just questioning. I think Wrigley should be number one. So I'm just surprised it was 10th.
It's sort of crazy. And Yankee Stadium wasn't even in the top 10. And I know that's a new ballpark, but I mean, the Yankees play there. Like people around the world are going to
have
that
you ever
ballpark.
Tried to walk into Yankee Stadium as a fan, though? You get in line for like an hour to get in there.
It's not
the security is so high there. You have to. I did a game at Yankee Stadium once. I did a football game there, and I'm not kidding. I had to wear a vest.
Did you do the pinstripe bowl?
I did.
I did the one with Northwestern.
I was
open air press box. Gotta love that one. It's 28
like
degrees.
I was down, vest on. It was so insane to me. I'm like, it's worse than going through airport security.
I'm an old Yankee fan. But I don't think Yankee Stadium is that great. It's disappointing. Also, the prices, it's like, $27.50 for a bottle of water. So that's kind of harsh. But, Wrigley's got to get its due. The people have to explain how Wrigley could be 10th on this list.
Yeah, I would like to know.
The people.
The people.
The people.
Attention, Forbes.
Right.
So Michael Kopech, we were talking about the Sox. Kopech sent down to the minors. Again, not a surprise. And you expect all of these guys to go down, no matter how good they might pitch. In spring training, it just doesn't matter at this point. Like, that's not what you want to see, Sox fans. You don't want to see these guys come up too early. Go ahead and press the point, make it feel a little uncomfortable, but just like Chris Bryant, slow your roll, go ahead and wait till the clock starts at an appropriate time.
I mean, let the White Sox prospects force their way to the major leagues, right? Let Michael Kopech go dominate the minors to the point where they have to bring him up, just the way it was with Chris Bryant and any of the Cubs prospects, right? I mean, they forced their way to the majors by dominating at the minor league levels. And, I mean, I think Kopech is really exciting to watch. I look forward to seeing him on the south side. But, I mean, there's no hurry right now. And, in fact, the White Sox would be better off, frankly, not getting off to a great start this year. Yeah. So, I mean, there's no reason to rush these guys up there. If you were trying to compete, be one thing, but they're not at this point.
It's a tough thing. It's just like the Bulls thing. You don't want to see the team do really well. What you want to see is a few guys do well.
Yeah.
You'd like to see James Shields pitch well enough
yes.
that you can move him at some
yes.
time around the trade deadline.
Right.
That's really what you're hoping for.
It is the Bulls because that's what you want.
Games.
You wanted Nico Mirotic and Robin Lopez to have great starts, and Nico did, and they flipped him for a first rounder. Robin played beautifully, but nobody wants a back to the basket center. But that's right. You want to see signs of growth. And also with the Bulls, like you saw Chris Dunn have a breakthrough. So you want individual guys to turn it on, to flip James Shields, and then, you know, steal up for the next few years.
Rick Hahn has been so transparent about this rebuild. And he specifically said when we were at Sox Fan Fest, he specifically said to me, yeah, we're not going to bring in any veterans and we're not going to move anyone to the big leagues until they are 100% ready and they are fully developed. This is, as you said, Luke, no surprise at all. And no one should be shocked or upset about this. Stay in the minors as long as you want. Yep. And we don't have to pay you as much either.
ESPN 1000's Jesse Rogers interviewed MLB crew chief Ted Barrett, asked him about the specifics of the new mound visits rule. The regular season starts next Thursday, and Barrett isn't exactly sure what the rule is going to be. We're still working on it. The iffy ones are when the infielder goes in. We're still working on some defining points, like if you go to the mound, dirt, or something like that, there has to be some guidelines for everyone. Halfway to the mound and stuff like that will get worked out. That's why they put the rule in regarding infielders. They didn't want teams finding a loophole. You know, instead of catchers going out there, they just might send out the third baseman. By opening day, there will be no gray area. By opening day, how much longer are you going to wait to do this?
Like, lots of digging.
The players are already trying to find the loophole. Like, Wilson Contreras says, I don't care how many times I go out there. And you know that the first baseman and third baseman are going to try stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the issue is that if it's not well-defined before the season starts, then the season begins. Somebody unintentionally breaks the rules, and then it turns into some controversy like every week in the NFL where we're deciding what's a catch and what's not a catch, where it turns into some crazy, you know, talk show fodder because, like, what are they doing? How do they not know the rules? So, I mean, if you want to avoid that, then you have to immediately set the guidelines so that people know. And I know what Wilson Contreras said, but I also don't think that that's realistic because the Cubs are not just going to let him go out there 100 times and have them penalized for it.
But how are they going to be penalized? I mean, that's what's so strange about this.
Yeah.
I mean, all we've heard is that the home plate umpire is going to, what, restrain the catcher? I mean, how's that going to work?
At his discretion?
Yeah.
Whatever that's supposed to mean.
This makes no sense. This is like your parents telling you, if you do this, you're going to get in trouble, but they don't tell you exactly how you're going to get in trouble.
Oh, so you would just go ahead and do it anyway.
Yeah, so I just wait and see what my punishment is going to be. I feel like that's what's going on right now.
Yes.
As you said, look, they're already trying to find loopholes. We've heard about this for weeks now. And opening day is, what, 2.5 weeks away at this point? I mean, how much longer are you going to wait?
It's really close. And the other one with the minor leagues putting the runner at second base for extra innings, that's even more absurd because that's going to slow down the game even more.
Why?
Because
why
pitching matchups will change like every single batter. You think they're bad now? Where do you try and put a guy at second base? It's going to go lefty-righty, 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 every single
batter.
Really?
Well, then,
I think it will.
They kind of already do that, I feel like.
Maybe
I feel like
they'll
multiply it.
So I have an idea that I feel like nobody has ever talked about. I would cap pitching staffs at 11 guys. That way you have more pinch runners, more specialists. I think that makes for a more entertaining game. And if you only have six relievers, you are not constantly using four and five relievers every game.
I think it would speed the game up, too. I mean,
that's
how annoying is it in the last three innings they go to a commercial break every 5 minutes? I feel like that's what really slows the game down is relievers. That's what the problem is.
The end of the game has gotten out of control.
It's out of control. You get up to get a drink, you come back, and it's at a commercial, and they're changing pitchers already.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Remember to watch the show weekdays on CSN and visit csnchicago.com for previous episodes of the podcast and all the latest sports news and highlights.